How do you identify the real thing when there are so many fakes? It's an important question in various realms of our lives. Wow. How do you identify my real voice when it's being amplified like that? One area where we struggle with that is in the world of email. You get all kinds of email inquiries about all manner of things, and you're left to figure out what's the real thing and what's just bogus. So the other day, I actually got an email that said, "Kindly send your personal information." And then it said, "This is a trusted source." And for a moment there, because they asked kindly, I was tempted to give them the personal information. But just in time, I became suspicious and didn't do it. It probably had to do with the fact that they had to tell me they were a trusted source rather than me just knowing that. So in the email world, that's the case. Also, we get mail of all kinds. And so my family moved just a few weeks ago. And since then, about every day, we get three or four pieces of mail that say something like, "Your home warranty may already be expiring. Our records indicated you haven't contacted us yet. Final notice. Immediate response requested. This is time sensitive. We have been attempting to contact you regarding a matter of importance." We get all these kinds of mailings and have learned to kind of ignore them. And we were advised by a very good realtor to do that. And then we got one the other day from our mortgage company and was almost tempted to overlook that one, but opened it up and just looked at it. And it said that our old mortgage was paid off, which, I mean, hey, we were glad to know that. That was good news. I'm glad I looked at that one. So how do you find the real thing in the midst of fakes? Well, back in the 90s, R&B singer Mary J. Blige sang these words, "I thought that love was true. I thought that you were the answer to the question in my mind, but it seems that I was wrong. If I stay strong, maybe I'll find a real love. I'm searching for a real love, and I don't know where to go. Been around the world and high and low, and still I never know. Real love, I'm searching for a real love, someone to set my heart free. I'm searching for a real love." And if you're late 40s or early 50s, I won't ask you if you can sing the lyrics to that song, but it's a good question. How do we find a real love in a world of counterfeits? What is real love? We are interested in the topic of love. Christians are interested in the topic of love, and non-Christians are interested in the topic of love, and you can find that in songs and sermons, in movies and TV shows, in classes and conversations and ceremonies. Love is everywhere. We speak of love when we're talking about feelings. We speak of love when we're talking about actions. We speak of love when we're talking about a family member or when we're talking about a favorite dessert. I love my wife and my kids. And I love my pets. And I love taking naps. And I love ham loaf and glazed carrots. I love all those things. But I don't, of course, love them in the same way. We speak of love and use that word sometimes in very simplistic and even, I would say, sugary kinds of ways that don't really speak to the realities of love. And the reality of love is that it can be complicated, that it can be perplexing, that it can be more provocative than we fully appreciate. So we are in a series that we begin today where we want to get past sentimentality and sugary ideas of love and shallow ideas of love. And we want to talk about what is real love. We want to talk about love in its tough facets. Because I think we all recognize that love is hard sometimes. Love of all kinds can be hard. Let me say just a bit about the genesis of this series. It didn't just come out of my own mind. So every fall, our church board and our staff have gotten into the pattern of having a Saturday morning meeting. And last fall, so a year ago in October, we met together, and one of the things that we talked about were the stresses and strains on love and unity that we see among Christians. And those stresses and strains have come from different places. They came from COVID responses. They came from political differences, the political climate, and so we have divisions about political candidates and issues, and we have differences over pandemic responses and when we reopened this and how we did and to mask or not to mask, and some of that seems like it's, you know, getting further and further behind in the rearview mirror, and yet perhaps the strains and the stresses on our love and unity are still there. Maybe we've moved past them, but have we really addressed them? Have we really dealt with them? And so the board and the staff agreed that this is something that we should talk about, and we wanted to do that in a sermon series. Now you say, well, that was a year ago. Why are we talking about it now? And part of the reason for that is I wanted to wait and tie in with the launch of Growth Groups, this series, because I would suggest to you that this topic and growing in this topic of tough love will go further if we can process it together, if we can talk about these issues together. And so I'd like to encourage you to, if you're not part of a group, to consider getting into a group of some kind. It's not too late. Many of our growth groups will be talking about these issues together. And so if you are not in a group, there's a couple ways there that you can get into one through our app. You can join a group. You can contact John Myers, who coordinates groups for us. Now, of course, the depth to which you can go in conversation will vary based on the familiarity of the group. So if you're new to each other, you're not really comfortable with each other, you may not be able to go as deep as you'd like. And yet, even if you're still just getting to know each other, I think these are valuable topics for us to think through. Also, as we get into this series, I'd encourage you to think about a person or people who are part of your life or were part of your life at one time, who you find it tough to love. I'd like you to think about them, and I'd encourage you to pray for them. And I'd encourage you to pray for the relationship that you have with them or the lack thereof. And I would invite you, as we go through the next 6 weeks, to be open to how you might actually practice some of the things that we're talking about. Now, not every sermon is going to be equally applicable to every relationship, because relationships can be very different. But I also know, I've been preaching a couple years now, times several, and I know that it can be easy to hear a sermon and to ignore it, to dismiss it, to think that it's a sermon for that other person, or for one reason or another not to do what the sermon is actually talking about. And I hope that we can maybe seek to overcome that inertia as we go through this series and become better at doing the tough thing when we talk about love. So that's the series that we're getting into this morning. I want to give us really kind of a big picture view of what is it that we're talking about when we talk about love. And here's where I would start, and I think I would start at a place where, you know, you say kind of, duh, like, don't we all think that? And I think we probably do, but it's good to hear it again and to reaffirm that it is true, and that is, I think we'd all agree that love is a non-negotiable. I mean, it's not optional. Whether you are a Christian or not, I suspect that you believe in the power and the necessity of love. I mean, other things we can question, we can doubt, we can qualify, we can wonder about, we can have different opinions on. But it is hard to argue with the premise that love is essential, that we all need love. I mean, the Beatles said it's all you need, right? And Nelson sang that they can't live without it, and Rihanna has it on the brain. But rather than considering their words, I'd like to consider what I think of as some older and more authoritative words on the subject of love. You know, Jesus had some things to say about love, some very important things to say. In one place, he talked about loving God and loving your neighbor. And he said, if you take those two together, well, all the law and the prophets hang on those two. I mean, that's really at the center of what God wants for people. Everything that God asks of us depends on those two, loving God, loving our neighbor. By this, Jesus said, everyone will know that you are my disciples. He's using some kind of strong language here. He says, all the law and the prophets hang on love. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. People will actually identify us with Jesus or not based on this issue of love. Paul, who followed Jesus, not surprisingly, agreed with Jesus and said, whoever loves others has fulfilled the law. Love is the fulfillment of the law. And he said, the only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. That's how faith gets worked out, is through love. And that's the only thing. Do you really mean that, Paul? That, like, really the only thing? The only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. So let all that you do be done. All that you do be done in love. Well, Peter, of course, another follower of Jesus, writing to Christians in the first century, agreed as well. Above all. You get a lot of this all, everything kind of language when we talk about love, don't you? Above all, love each other deeply because love covers over a multitude of sins. Similar message from the Apostle John. We know that we have passed from death to life because we love each other. Anyone who does not love remains in death. Quick pause. Take you in the back door of preaching a sermon. Usually when I bring a reference to you, I like to encourage you to look at the context. You know, don't just pull stray verses here and there and talk about them, but look at who wrote them and look at why they wrote them and look at the overall flow of what they wrote before and after the verse. That's usually what I do, and now I've just done the opposite, haven't I? I've been, you know, grabbing verses from here and there. In this case, I feel okay about that. Because even when you take these excerpts, when you put them together, I mean, the message is clear, isn't it? And it just affirms what we all already believe and know, that love is so essential, that love is important, that love matters. But you know, there's something even more fundamentally significant about love than these instructions that we need to do it. Paul, again, writes this to Christians in Ephesus. He says, I pray that you may know this love, speaking of God's love, that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. A couple things that are interesting there. You know, we tend to think about the importance of knowledge. So, you know, some of you, when you sit and listen to a sermon, you want to hear something you didn't know before. You're looking for knowledge. Paul suggests that more important than knowledge, about this, that, or the other thing, is to really know, and he doesn't just mean like intellectually know, but to experientially know love. Because in knowing love, he says, you will be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. You want more of God inside you. You need to know love. And John adds this from the text that Brooke read for us earlier. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God, and God in them. So love is the very essence of God. Let me show you a chart here that looks at how we often think about love compared to the reality, especially when we think about God's love. Now John said God is love. So we tend to think of love as that is one of God's qualities. God is loving, just like God is holy. He is merciful. He is wrathful. He is righteous. We think of it as one of the qualities of God. But in reality, it's not just another quality of God. Because God is love. It is the essence of God to be loving. And then other qualities will be expressions. Every single other quality that God expresses is an expression of love. So God can never express himself in a way that is not loving. Even, interestingly enough, even the wrath of God is ultimately an expression of his love. Baxter Kruger, a theologian, says wrath is God's love in action. The wrath of God is his emphatic no to anything that leads to our destruction. Carolyn Aaron says it's love at its fiercest and purest is God's wrath as an expression of his love. That's love. It's the essence of God. And it's the essence of those who choose to follow Jesus. And it doesn't need to be balanced with anything else. It is the whole thing, is love. You get the point? We need it. It's essential. It's absolutely imperative. It is vital. We need it. But here's the big but, the kicker. Love is also hard, isn't it? I mean, you know, we can talk very loftily about love and we can parade the Bible verses, but to consistently do it, to live it out day in and day out in this relationship and that relationship and in this situation and that one is so hard to do. And part of the reason for that, I'd suggest to you that it's so hard is because back to where I started this morning, because there are all kinds of counterfeit love. There are counterfeit loves out there that they look like love and we might think of them as love, but when it comes down to it, they are not really love. So let me suggest to you briefly four counterfeit loves. See if any of these have fooled you. One would be sentimentality. That's a counterfeit love, sentimentality. And I'd suggest to you that that's what most popular conceptions of love turn into. You know, when you listen to music, especially when we talk about romantic love, it tends to sort of stray into sentimentality. You know, when Mary J. Blige sings, "I'm searching for a real love, someone to set my heart free." That's got a little bit of sentimentality to it. It's when I have deep feelings about someone. You know, we sometimes think of that as love. I feel this warm comfort when I'm with them. Or I feel those butterflies of excitement when I get to see them. And that must be love. Or even I feel this kind of passionate intensity. Just this spark, this connection when I'm with them. Or sometimes we have nostalgia for those experiences. I'd suggest to you that if that's the only thing we see love as, then we're looking at a counterfeit. It's not the real deal. How about a second one? Activism. Activism can be a counterfeit for love. Now, if you were tuned into the sermon last week, I talked about activism then. And then I suggested that, well, of course, activism can be a very good thing. And I also said that activism sometimes can just be doing good and not necessarily a way to connect with God. That was a point that I made last week. But, you know, we last week talked about the value of using causes that we might be drawn to as a way to connect with God. Well, this week, what I want to say is that activism can sometimes be a counterfeit love. I mean, when people are motivated to stand up for justice, to try to correct wrongs in the world, to try to treat people fairly and stand up against favoritism, they can be motivated by love. So that can be a kind of love. And so many good people, activist kind of people, are motivated by love. Especially at the beginning of their crusade. They are concerned for others. They are motivated by love. But, you know, something that can happen over time, not always, but it can happen over time, that as time goes on and other people oppose the activist and their cause, and other people don't understand what the big deal is, and the activist doesn't see the kind of difference that they were hoping to make, what can happen is over time, bitterness and anger can overtake the love that they started with. And so rather than being driven by love for the hurting and the oppressed, their motivation can become to, you know, stick it to those bad people, to even gain power over others so they can control them. So doing good, taking action, they're not automatically love. Sometimes they're just a counterfeit love. Here's another one. If you haven't connected with either of those two, how about this one? Niceness. Isn't that a good South Central Pennsylvania quality? We're all so nice. And we think of niceness as love. But you know, there can be a problem with that. Because, you know, in the name of loving niceness, we can focus too much on keeping other people happy, such that we don't say things that need to be said or do things that need to be done. In fact, we might even, and not intentionally so, but we might even deceive another person or might even outright lie to another person. Why? Because we want to be nice. Because we love them, and so we want to spare their feelings. And so we fail to tell them something that they need to hear. Pastor Ben Sternke says the nervous managing of other people's emotions is actually a form of codependence, not love. And theologian Richard Mao says this: we will not solve all our problems simply by becoming more civil people. In other words, by becoming nicer people. We will not solve all our problems because there are times when it is appropriate to manifest some very uncivil feelings. Passionate intensity, as he calls it, is not always out of place. If I'm going to be a more civil person, it cannot be because I've learned to ignore my convictions. Can I say that again? If I am going to be a more civil person, a nicer person, it cannot be because I have learned to ignore my convictions. Some people, in the name of being nicer people, ignore their convictions. And that is not love. We can substitute niceness for real love. But, Now, the flip side is also true. You know, another counterfeit kind of love could be bluntness. Whew, that feels better, doesn't it? Let's go talk about that other, let's not talk about niceness anymore. You know, I call it like I see it. You know, I love you, and so I just need to tell you the truth, even if it offends you. And if it offends you, that is not my problem, I'm sorry, but I do love you. Yes, absolutely, being direct and to the point can be loving and is part of love. Or it can just be tactless and rude. You know, truth sometimes gets a bad rap. You know, like it must always be a negative thing. But there is all kinds of truth that we need to hear that is very positive and encouraging and building up. And even when we have to tell a truth that's a hard truth, you know, we can do it in ways that are not hard and caustic. So there you have four counterfeit loves. Now, let me just maybe seemingly contradict what I just said and say this. I think all four of them can be part of love. All four of them, really, we need as part of love. It's when we pull any one of them out and say, this is love, that we run into problems. So let me give you, if we've looked at what love is not, let me give you a picture for what love is. Here's a definition that I have come across from another pastor named Fred Miller, and I love this definition. Love is compassionately acting in another person's best interests. Compassionately acting in another person's best interests. I love this definition. Why do I love it? Well, I think because it starts with compassion, first of all. It starts with compassion. With the idea that love is something that we ultimately need to feel toward others. I mean, compassion is I can relate to someone else. I can understand how it is in their shoes. I can feel what they feel. That's compassion. And love has to include compassion. I mean, love is not just a cold and clinical, you know, I do the right thing in a sterile, emotionless way. There's compassion in real love. Peter said it well. 1 Peter 1:22, he said, you have sincere love for each other, so love one another deeply from the heart. There's got to be heart behind it. I mean, love includes our feelings. It includes our attitude, our way of thinking about someone else. All of that's part of love. But it's not just feelings. It's not just good intentions. Love is actually deciding to act, and then it's following through. So it is compassion and it is action. It's compassionately acting because love acts. Compassionately acting in another person's best interest. It's not just what makes them happy, though it might. It's not just what makes them feel good, but it might, but it's what actually is good for them. It's compassion, and it's conviction, and it's action, all coming together. That is real love. If you're searching for it, I think there it is. So go do it. Just kidding. I asked you a little bit ago to think about a person or think about people that might be hard for you to love. How are you doing at showing them real love? I mean, we know, you agree with me, Love is important. It is essential. It is non-negotiable. We have to, if we do anything else, we have to love. And it is hard. It is so easy. I'll speak for myself. It is so easy to default to a counterfeit kind of love that isn't really, at the end of the day, love. How are you doing at loving that person in your life? Are you willing to give up a counterfeit in order to compassionately act in that other person's best interests? Whether there's a past hurt that needs to be addressed, or an issue that needs to be confronted, or just a difference of personality or preference or opinion that you have to work through. How are you doing at really loving? If you want to make progress in this area, here's a good question you might ask yourself. And it's a question that you can take into any situation. What does love require of me? And again, if we're defining love the way I've talked about today, what does love require of me in this situation with this person? What does love require of me? You know, when you're identifying a counterfeit, let's talk about money for a second. You know how you identify counterfeit money? I did a little digging this week. Sometimes I get on these rabbit trails. Just because I was curious. And so, you know, you do a search, online search for identifying counterfeit money. And I mean, you can find all kinds of websites. I mean, you can find government websites from those that print the money. And I mean, they have a nice picture of every different denomination of bill. And then they'll show you some of the security features. You know, on $1 bills, there's this, 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 and this. And on 10 and 20 and 50 and 100, you know, there's all these different features. And so if you're trying to identify the counterfeit, you look for these things. Here's the interesting thing. When you're trying to identify counterfeit money, you don't study the ways that counterfeiters create fakes. You don't look at the way that they create fakes because eventually, someone's going to come up with a fake that you haven't seen before. You look at the real thing. And you study what the real thing looks like so that then when you look at the bill, you can see if it's different from the real thing or not. I'd suggest to you that it's the same with love. What is the real thing? Well, you know, John had this to say. The Apostle John said, "This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us." And so here's where we end with this reminder that the ultimate definition of love, which, you know, is harder to put into words, the ultimate definition of love is Jesus on the cross. He is our model. He is our example. And as we gaze at his example, we can learn what love is. And we can be motivated to love. And as we rely on the spirit of the crucified and resurrected Jesus, we can grow in actually being able to do it. And we remind ourselves of that as we come to a time of communion this morning. You know, every time we take these elements, and you can do that, every time we take these elements, we are reenacting the greatest act of love the world has ever seen. And that act, the death of Jesus, was motivated by the purest love in the world. That is the love of God, which has been poured out on us. And as we share in this small meal, it's a small meal, but it is a big meal. It is a big deal meal, isn't it? It's our response of love to that love that we have been shown. As we take these elements, we say, God, thank you for loving us. We love you too. And we also say, this love has so overwhelmed us that we have to share it. We just can't keep it to ourselves. Sometimes when we take communion, we focus more on the vertical. It's what God in Christ has done for me, and so I'm remembering and thanking him. But there's also the horizontal that's implied, because the two greatest commandments are love God and love each other. And so as we take these elements, it's good to ask ourselves, how am I doing at loving God and loving the other people around me? Am I doing what love requires of me to the best of my ability in partnership with God in my life? I invite you to take a moment of quiet and reflect on that. Let's do that.